Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. I'm Stephanie Seisen, here with Jerome Ostentowski. Today we welcome Living Permaculture regular and local Carbondale farmer, Casey Pastura from Wild Mountain Seeds. Welcome back, Casey.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today in the full growing season time. I'm sure you're busy out there on the farm. It's a warm, warm day. So we appreciate you taking some time in the shade to chat with us. Can you, in case any of our listeners haven't heard of you before, or they're listening from a place that's not Carbondale, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and what Wild Mountain Seeds is?
Sure. It's great to be here. Thanks for a chance to get in this time of day. and we're located out 133 outside of Carbondale, heading towards Redstone on the right-hand side of the road. The farm is located on Sunfire Ranch, which is owned by the Soul Brothers, descendants of Meyer, and have owned the ranch now for, I think, 126 years. We operate on a lease there where we grow both produce for sale as well as do seed breeding and improvement for making plants adapted to our climate, as well as more productive and better at growing for folks across the country.
Great. And we have a lot of your plants here at our ranch, and I know Jerome has gotten quite a few of your tomato varieties up there at Crimpy in years past. I'd love to hear, is there a new variety that you're playing with that you're particularly excited about this year?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a whole line of tomatoes that are like mini heirlooms, and we're working on trying to make those a little bit more stable and consistent. And those are nice because it's a little easier to trellis them. Don't want a super huge heirloom, but still want an heirloom tomato, so that's a fun project. We're also in a year of a super improvement trial for greenhouse production, in which we've used a wide variety of cucumbers to try to make an open pollinated hybrid swarm. I know listeners, that might sound kind of crazy, but basically what that means is a population of cucumbers that has diverse parents that has what's called parthenocarpic, or it produces without the presence of pollinators, and a certain part of the population is parthenocarpic, while there's still enough pollinators or male blossoms to produce seeds. So that's been exciting to see that come to fruition.
Great. That's something you've given us several varieties of cucumbers, and we have several varieties. And I think we'll be kind of doing a parallel experiment here this year with some of yours, and I'm working on that hybrid vigor that they're trying to come up with. And, you know, I've always been sort of fond of, the heirlooms, but what you've been talking about and what you've been experimenting with is the heirlooms are really, they're great, but you are taking this whole to a whole nother level. And you just talk about that. And when you're crossing things, it's kind of like when you've got meat rabbits, you just don't want to, a purebred meat rabbit. You want to get a big variety of genetic material in your meat rabbits, and they become better mothers. They have bigger litters. And I think it's true with plants as well then, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of our heirlooms where we've kind of gotten really specific in that we want to have the sameness of every generation, the plants have become quite inbred. And the more that they're only crossed with similar parents, or like where it's more and more inbred, you start to lose vigor. And so a lot of our production has, at least in commercial production, has moved into what they call hybrids. And what hybrid means is there was both a mother plant and a father plant, that the plant didn't cross with itself or cross with the same variety, that there was actually two parents. What we're doing is kind of taking the diversity and kind of great flavor and within what's available in heirloom plants and creating hybrid blooms and utilizing what we call pollination or free pollination, where you have lots of bees, lots of different genetics represented, and then selecting out of that to make plants that are what we call diverse in a theme. The theme could be early red beet, or it could be, you know, early tasty cucumber for the greenhouse, but more diverse than just one variety, but they still work for our production. And this helps us also be prepared, like diseases or frost, or it's just when you have more diversity, you're more likely to have survivors and things that can deal with environmental stresses.
And especially the hardiness that you're working on there, because you have a difficult climate that you're working there. You're in a zone 4, and you get a lot of, you know, frost that we don't get up here. And so we're breeding your plants down there, and you're moving a lot of stuff outside and really stressing it out with cold. Your seeds are going to become more hardy. So we want hardy plants, even though we're zone 6 up here. Most of the valley floor is zone 4 and 5, and it could even get worse down the road. So anyway, you can continue that.
Well, it's so great, Casey, to see the photos you put up of your frost trials for your tomatoes. It's impressive to see those flats that you put out to freeze and see these few in the flat that survived and are still green and vibrant, surrounded by other seedlings that didn't take the frost so well. And to see those photos is impressive, and to see what kind of genetics those are going to create in the future, and how we can do better with tomatoes and those hot season varieties here in this cold climate is really great and important work.
Yeah, thanks. And it's a lot of kind of learning what plants, what their limits are, and really kind of trying to figure out how to match the environmental stress with the limit that the plants will actually give you something to work with. So mm-hmm. we've learned over the years, it started with a lot of happy accidents to to still... but anyways, where we had a Darwinian experience, such as the heater goes out in the greenhouse and it left a few surviving plants. After a couple years of Darwinian experiences and trying to minimize those, we started to wonder, well, what if we just actually put these plants out there and really look for times when we're going to hit really their threshold? And now we found the threshold to be about 28 degrees. We dip much below that, it starts to kill the whole population. But now we're in the fourth generation, some more than that, but 4 solid generations of forced frosting thousands of plants, and seeing strains that are amongst have the highest percentage of surviving genetics year in and year out. So that's been pretty nice to see that one, it survived the year before, and then it survived the following season. But it really is going beyond just the ability for them to survive that one potential late frost or something that may be a stressor in our environment, but also to start to adapt them to just regular cooler or more extreme temperatures, where we may get really hot days and cool nights. And the tomatoes really just, if you have some that are bred in a warm climate, they're just not ready for a cold night. And when you can steadily adapt them for their ability to ultimately be more photosynthetically efficient at lower soil temperatures. That's really the work that that we need to do to be more productive in our short season.
Well, and while we're on that note, if someone listening is intrigued about these seeds that you have that you're breeding in these really wonderful ways, how can they get a hold of some of those seeds?
So seeds are available on our website, wildmountainseeds.com. Again, just ordering through the website, wildmountainseeds.com. And that is the best way to acquire the seeds. We may do some seed racks in the future, but as of now, seeds are kind of sensitive. I feel like sending them in a bubbled mailer in a cold temperature environment is the best way to trade seeds amongst the people.
Wonderful. So, Casey, I know that you have opened up a new nonprofit called Seed Peace. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I don't know a ton about it, obviously, about seeds. Can you share with us what you're up to with that project?
So part of the main what the project is to do is to pair food pantry assistance with research in agriculture and seeds. So what we're doing is taking donations. With those donations, we're putting out different trials, whether it's mainly focused on crops that are really ones that do well in our climate, that really could feed people, and focusing a lot on winter storage vegetables. Types of things. With that donation money, we'll go out and put out a trial, let's say, of carrots, and we may plant 400 foot rows, so of carrots, and we may need 300-400 roots to grow out for seed the following season. All the excess of those trials we're giving away to the food bank, with the goal of kind of connecting folks with the local food movement, bringing people out to make success. Selections with that are people that are community members, and hopefully getting excited about the reality of the stuff we can do, what stuff we can scale, and the goal is just to add a healthy food to people in need while kickstarting growth in our local food system.
Excellent.
Great. How has the pandemic affected your marketing strategy this year? What adjustments have you made in terms of being able to market your produce where you can't? Last year you had different clients. This year, because of some of the restaurants closing, how has that affected you?
Yeah. I mean, I think as a start, first, I think people just got to go to the grocery store and there's not food, and a lot more about how they can help out the local food economy, where it seems that sometimes without the necessity of seeing no produce in the grocery store, people kind of don't take as much responsibility in stewarding and building the local food system. So we've seen more support there coming from it. From a seed standpoint, people also that really get into home gardening. And so we saw a huge growth in seed sales. And then seeing the new people getting out there in the garden and understanding that local seed is important. So that's been great for us. We also saw a lot of adapted transplants. So those sales were up. And now we're kind of settling into more of the, I think, the tougher marketing piece within how do we go about packing, washing, and doing all the vegetables for sale in a safe manner, which we're practicing social distancing at our farm stands and working on really keeping hands clean and wearing masks where needed in packing and washing and things. So,
great. And you've been sending some stuff over to Mana Foods as well. Some greens over there, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been Mana Foods and Skip's right. Farm to Market have been good clients of ours. There's a lot of produce going all around. The Beet in Carbondale has been selling things through a grocery delivery service in Carbondale, and that's been making more produce available. And then we are now doing farm stands on Fridays at the Landmark Cafe, which is 689 Main Street in Carbondale, next to the post office, on Fridays from 3 to 8. So trying to get as much of the produce out to the people.
Yeah, and I think that you're when you focus on, you've got a diverse economic model where you're selling seeds, bedding plants, which is a big and we even had a bedding plant sale at Mana Food this year instead of the Dandelion Days. That was a big help for us as well. We did like a $500 plant sale there with perennial vegetables. I know you had a Saturday there, and you're doing it on Friday. Having all these income sources from a farm, and you also get some income sources on education. So we'll be over there for a couple of afternoons or evenings for tours and having you talk about what you're doing at some of our classes at our academy and our design course. So, the more you can do, more education, I think the more you're going to be able to bring in additional income sources there, because you have a good backdrop for education, because you're doing some really unique things and people need that exposure over there, hands-on exposure. I think you're coming over here on Monday to do grafting, doing a little grafting thing at my place. So I'm going to be teaching you some, and your interns are doing some grafting. And we're going to send some people over to you to show, so you can show them how to do annual plants, because that's what we struggle with here. Not so much perennial plants, but annual plants. So we fumble with annuals a lot and mistag them and don't get them to germinate. So we're going to figure out what you're doing over there that works. So I think we're about to wrap up this section of, I think we're close to wrapping up this first half hour of, and we're going to do part two for next month, I believe.
Yeah, we still have a few more minutes to go. We probably have about 6 minutes or so to keep chatting now. But as Jerome mentioned, you can tune in next month to KDNK for the second part of this interview. Jerome, you just mentioned some workshops you have where you might be going to Casey's. Do you still have spots in those workshops? And if so, do you want to let our listeners know how they can get involved with that?
Great. They can go on our website, crmpi.org, and we still have room for people to sign up for our design course, which is on the 13th of July. And then our academy is in August. And both of those classes will be coming over to Casey, if not for a tour, for a whole half a day. So, and we also will probably be doing another weekend workshop in September, which we had our first weekend workshop on greenhouses and forest garden a couple of weeks ago that was very successful. So we're actually making all these adjustments with COVID, and we're able to do, social distancing and redesigning our curriculum so that it's safe to be here. And so we have a great team of instructors for the design course. We have Adam Brock and two new people from Denver. And unfortunately, you're not going to be here. You're going to be in
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. So we'll have a substitute for you, but we'll have you during the academy, hopefully.
I'm definitely here for August and excited about the trip to Puerto Rico. And so both this question, and I guess it's for both you, Jerome, and for Casey, with the aftermath or whatever is going on in the world, and the new interest or renewed interest or expanded interest in gardens and gardening. Have you seen an uptick in people signing up for workshops or looking for volunteer positions, or how has that affected the educational side of your businesses?
I can chime in on that. We've had a big uptick in consulting for our greenhouse, consulting for ecosystems design. We have several, you know, new greenhouses, a couple of big, larger greenhouses here and over in Steamboat that I'm helping, and our whole team is designing the plant material, and Michael Thompson is our partner in ecosystem design, is doing all the structural and permit stuff. And so that's a big uptick. And also we've gotten some interest in forest gardening. We've started our nursery here again. So we have a perennial plant nursery. And that's right now we have some interns potting up grapes. And I think we have about 150 grapes that we're potting up for our sales. We have you know, lots of really interesting perennial vegetables that we're really, really focusing on. And that's what I'm selling at Mauna, too, perennial vegetables, nettles, lamb's quarters that I brought from Calgary 25, 30 years ago, and now I'm growing in this wild spinach. Those are sort of the, Casey's working on hybridized annuals. We're working on perennial vegetables. So it's a nice mix. So we kind of have, we cover all of our bases that way.
And Casey, how about for you with volunteers and interns and things like that? Have you seen more interest in gaining that knowledge?
We've had lots of interest pretty much perennially more now, I think, because we're settling into our seventh season and seeing our systems working, and more that we're getting out about kind of our strategies and both seed, produce, and just so lots of interest and both apprentices and everything, and definitely tons of interest in seed work, and we're excited for the future.
Excellent. So we have just a couple minutes left. Casey, is there anything else you want to share on this June episode of Living Permaculture with our listeners out there?
If you are interested in what we're doing with growing food for food banks and studying plants, expanding on seeds and systems for growing our food supply, check out seedpeace.org or wildmountainseeds.com.
So that's seedpeace.org or wildmountainseeds.com.
Yeah.
Excellent. And where can listeners get a hold of your delicious food? Mauna, I hear, if they're local. And are there any farmers markets that you're doing this year, or where else can we get to eat your yummy things?
A host of restaurants around the valley, from a lot in Carbondale, and then on Fridays at the Landmark Cafe in Carbondale from 3 to 8 p.m. farm stand. That's your opportunity to get the food there.
Yeah, and as far as what we're selling, we're still selling greens and wild plants, perennial plants, greens at Mauna, and also our tinctures there and salves, and the Forest Garden Greenhouse book.
So if anyone out there is looking for plants or seeds or food or education, these two guys are the people to call. So we are wrapping up today. I wanted to give one shout out for a workshop happening July 23rd in Paonia. Look at thegrownetwork.com. It's medical skills for when there is no doctor, which I think is a really interesting one that I'm going to be attending myself. Thanks for tuning in to Katie and Kay. Casey, we appreciate you joining. This was the Living Permaculture Show. Join us next month for part two, where this conversation continues with Casey Prescura.